driving. Hope comes and stops us in our tracks. Bravely we prove in our striving, trudging together each day. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Raw Recovery, a Trudging Together podcast. My name is Dion, and I'm going to be your host today, as most days. But we are back to podcasting some personal stories. Today, I've been trying to. So, Jason and I have been trying to do this podcast, I think, for about 2 years now. but in the meantime, we've gotten to know each other, and I'm looking forward to this one. I met Jason through a friend, Cara, who has also told her story on our podcast. I'll give a little plug there. Fantastic story too. And I met Jason when I was able to, I believe I came and talked at your Collision. Is that what it was, Jason?
The Recovery Institute.
Yeah, the Recovery Institute. Jason is based out of Kalamazoo, and I love Kalamazoo. I love what you guys do there. I love your recovery centers. I love a lot of the people, you know, so I'm a big Kalamazoo fan. Great. You guys do great work out there, Jason.
Appreciate you too.
Yeah. So, but we're here to do a story, and Jason is taking his Saturday afternoon to share his story with us. So welcome to the show, Jason. It is good to have you on.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Yeah. So at Raw Recovery here, we know that I do things a little differently. I don't like to take over the show. And so what I do here is I completely give up the podcast to the speaker, because this is their show. And they're the ones taking their time. So I'm just the person in the background who gets to help out, which I love doing. So at this point, I'm going to turn the show over to Jason. And Jason, why don't you tell us about yourself, man? And thank you.
All right. Again, thanks for having me. Definitely a goal in the making, and we're here today.
Yeah.
So I'm Jason Curris. I'm a housing manager in a recovery home called Reach Sober Living.
Yeah.
We have several projects that are going on. This year, we're actually blowing up quite a bit, pretty fast.
Hey.
Everything from the phase three home that I'm in now, several other locations, residential homes for families in recovery, independent living for the gentleman once they transition from here,
and so a
care facility.
Yeah.
I started out in drug court.
Yeah. Yay.
That really changed my life. It was rough going in the beginning, and then it started to sink in probably about halfway through my 3 year term with them.
Okay.
But before the recovery started, of course, there was the dependency or the addiction to alcohol.
Sure.
And for me, that started at the age of 6.
Oh.
Shortly after, some different traumas.
Okay.
Suffered, which today I kind of dig deep into that sort of thing. I'm one that would agree with Dr. Gabor Mate. He specializes in child development, trauma, and addiction.
Okay.
And how the three overlap, and that's just taken me to new heights. It's led me not only to pursue school, but specifically social work.
Yeah.
And then how that relates to not only my story, but others out there.
Absolutely. You're a great fit for social work, especially with your experience and your background. You know, a lot of times our experience can lead us to to good jobs, man. Good jobs that are good fits for us.
So I noticed here, I'm kind of going backwards rather than forwards. So yeah.
It's all right.
In regard to that, so that's kind of where I'm at. What happened was lots and lots of jail and or prison,
okay,
probation, crimes that weren't me, but they were me at the time.
Yeah.
I've been able to turn over a new leaf, but a lot of things I'm not proud of. Things that aren't even my character.
Sure.
I operate from a place of compassion today, as opposed to in the past, a place of fear.
Yep.
And of pain. And the two kind of go hand in hand. Something that I would say that I learned from the literature, AA, is the predecessor to every 12-step that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But part of my journey too was venturing on into the recovery coaching scene.
Yeah.
Which really got me to, again, to refer to the literature, open-minded, willing and honest. And it got me to see things from a different lens, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm. And do you want to kind of describe what a recovery coach is? Because there's a lot of, I have a lot of people that are newer and they may not know.
Okay. Recovery coach, in the simplest words, would be similar to a sponsor, a person to encourage, you, support you. Give you resources, help you set goals, and of course to just listen. In fact, I've kind of drawn a line between three things. A sponsor.
Yep.
A recovery coach, and a social worker. And what the three have in common is pretty much those things that I just mentioned.
Yes.
You know, of course, they have their specific functions as well, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, but you know, as a recovery coach, I have to follow certain rules. As a social worker, I may have to follow different rules in that role. For me, I have a rule because I'm a recovery coach also, but I sponsor first. Yes. And then my recovery coach can have, you know, it's like all work and no play, and you know.
Yeah, I guess I definitely get you. It's like switching hats, all, you know.
Yeah.
It's that too kind of reminds me of the steps. You know, once you've been through the steps several times, you kind of learn where they're applicable in any situation. Same with the hats. You know, it really, you gauge the situation. It's like, okay, this would be proper here, that sort of thing.
I get a little jealous of people that can define them better than I can. I personally have a hard time with it, but thank God for people that can make that division, because I wasn't able to do it. That's okay. I have my own stuff. So I did have some questions. What was it like growing up in your family? Did you have alcoholic parents?
Sort of.
Okay.
You know that.
You drank at six. That's why I'm asking.
So, I guess I would say it like this. So, like I believe the term is nuclear family.
Okay. Yeah.
You know where it's and it doesn't sound as explosive as it sounds, but it's, you know, his, hers, and ours sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, my biological father was 100% alcoholic. Okay. He also had mental illness, accompanied with the fact that him and my mother were teens in high school. My mother's father was 100% alcoholic.
Okay.
And my biological father's father was an alcoholic. So my first experience with intensive outpatient, I think I was 16 years old.
Okay.
And I was told that I was what is called a 99.9% alcoholic.
Thank you.
And what that meant was, you're right. So like, I had a snowball's chance in Hades. To get sober, right?
Yep.
That wasn't encouraging.
No.
And then
especially at 16.
Right.
Being called your life's over. You're done.
Full blown alcoholic too by that age.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I believe it.
My bad. My second father figure would be my first stepfather. He was a drinker but not an alcoholic.
Okay.
He had been around since I was about a year old. My biological father was either in the mental hospital or prison or jail for one thing or another. And at the age of 6, I experienced trauma. I was molested.
Okay.
And at the age of 6, it kind of does a lot to the mind of a child. I withdrew, become very quiet.
Yep.
Automatically felt like I was broken, something was wrong with me. Again, at that age, it does a lot to the mind. I carried it with me for a really long time. So my parents were young parents.
Yes.
They would drink, I guess, socially, I'd say. Weekends is what I remembered.
Okay.
But they thought it was funny, and they were very irresponsible at that time. Bless their heart. Sometimes, you just don't know better.
Yeah.
You do things because you think it's funny or cool. So I tried alcohol from the lid of a baby food jar, like actual alcohol, not beer.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was it hard liquor? Because
vodka.
Sounded like.
Yeah, vodka. I made faces. They laughed.
Yep.
So this may sound hard to believe, but I knew I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do think it was a taste because over all the years, it's never, ever been the taste.
Okay.
I think even then, it was the way that it made me feel.
Yeah.
And it seemed to make what happened go away. So it was the start
of
me dealing with something with that as the coping mechanism.
Yeah.
At the age of 6.
And isn't that, it just kind of convinces me more that we're born with this disease. Because, even at the age of 6, your brain said, oh, I like it. Here's my answer. Here's my solution. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. For me, I also have add-ons to that.
Okay.
Yeah. As I progress and the things that we pursue and learn, like yourself and I and others, like you brought up the DSM-5, like that's taught me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like the environment that Gabor Mate, there's actually software that we use here at work called RatCap.
Yeah.
And some of the research that they've done with like rats and environments. So environment is one of the things that we can change. That does matter.
It does.
Even if it is genetic, which I think is the case, just not always.
Not always. I agree. Not always. It'd be nice if we had the answer to that, but we just don't. So we got to work with it.
Give it time.
Yeah. Right. There you go. Give it time. Maybe not in our lifetime, but maybe, huh?
Right. Let's see here. To kind of pick up where I left off, the next trauma that impacted me was my biological father, the abandonment.
Yep.
Because of his behavior and his choices and his use and this and that, it obviously took him away, put him in jail or put him in the mental hospital or put him in prison. Yep. So, of course, being a kid, that impacts you too. Again, with like the DSM-5 or just even mental health, there's a lot of things that impact and contribute to our experience with addiction, Mm-hmm. And then also, because of my behavior, because of those traumas and the way that I was dealing with it, I was beat by the other caregiver. Probably until I was about 12 years old.
Yeah.
So that too, you know, it does stuff to the mind. These experiences, if they happen long enough, we normalize them.
That's what I was getting ready to. By the time you were 16, I mean, you were grown up by the time you were 16. Yeah, you were grown up by the time you were 10. I mean, I bet you were doing dishes at the age of 8. So yeah, you were grown up, and that was a normal world for you.
Right. And that also, encompassed all the negative impacts that come from that. You know, yeah. Like I said, when the first thing happened, I withdrew. That's not a normal, healthy thing.
No, it's not.
You know? And then the coping mechanism, again, not a normal thing, not a healthy thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to get, I want to say, I don't know, they say we live to, you know, our 80s, 90s these days. So let's say about a quarter and a half of my life, if not more. Okay. That was life. That was normal.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, you know, like I said, the drug court thing. That my life changed. But I would say that the seed of change, just of change, was rooted when I went to prison the very last time. I had an assault of offenders programming that I had to complete
over
a year that I had to do before I was released to be able to see the parole board.
Yeah.
Well, it was awesome. Actually, it was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, touch on things you didn't even expect.
And sure.
Is when I went on a DUI, but they said the first prison, but if you ever come back through here again, you're going to have to do this.
Yeah.
Criteria, I guess. But I'm so thankful for it today. And then another piece I think that was important, discipline, right? So
I did
SAI, Special Alternative Incarceration Boot Camp.
Okay.
And I've always kind of had a fascination, I guess, with military or just discipline, you know what I mean?
It's the Virgo in you.
Probably.
Virgos love discipline. We love structure, man.
Right. Yes.
What are we doing next? Okay, when are we doing it? In 2 minutes? Great. Perfect. I got it.
Right. Yep. An organization. You know what I mean?
Yep. Love it. Look at my room. All organized.
So those two things, I think, you know, even though there's a nice long gap after both of those, they were planted at the right time, the right place, in the right way.
Yep.
And, you know, like you mentioned earlier when we talked on the phone, God's timing, you know what I mean?
Yep.
If we get so wrapped up with the concept of time or the obstacle of time, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change a thing. As much pain and misery.
Yeah.
And dysfunction and problems and prison and jail.
Why wouldn't we change that now?
Right. You know, I tell people today, like, all the baloney that we pulled today, if you're in recovery, the benefits, man, because everything that you've been through, you're going to relate and be able to touch that much or that many more people.
Absolutely, Jason.
And that's, you know, that's that boomerang effect, you know?
Yeah.
You throw it out there and help who you can, and it mysteriously comes back to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I have found that the people that have been through more trauma and more things in life that find recovery are the people that can help the most because they have a wide array of experience. You know, like for me, you know, I grew up in white suburbia, but my parents put me into the system at 14. So I went from white suburbia to hanging out with Crips and Blood. And I had to learn how to become dangerous, or I was not going to survive. So when I went back to white suburbia, there were nothing to me anymore. You know, it was a different life. But what I didn't understand is how dangerous I had become because of what I was doing. That was scary. How old are you now, Jason?
47.
47? Oh, look at man. You look like you're in your 30s.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I look like I'm in my 50s. But
a wise 50, sir.
A wise 50. So nowadays, I mean, so we went through drug court, and is that what changed it? Is that why you're like, I'm not going to do this shit anymore? Is that what it was, or was it the DUI prison, or
a bit? I think it was the two different seeds that were planted, accompanied with that,
okay,
and then also accompanied with the pain and misery become so great.
Yeah.
And, I wanted God more than when I had him, more than when I knew of him, more than when I was taught of him.
Sure.
And oddly enough, you know, and I'm not trying to push God on nobody.
No.
But any of these 12 steppers point, I would say, in the direction of a higher power. Higher power just kind of says God.
Yeah.
But to each their own. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I only call God God so that I don't confuse people.
Right.
That's the only reason I did. You know, it's a conformity thing, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to run around. You know, otherwise that just makes me unique. And you know, I'd rather talk about recovery and solution than what my God looks like.
Right, right. You know, at the end of the day, I know it's not me. You know what I mean?
That's it. You know? That's all that matters.
If it's not me, we're in good shape. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and not playing God is always a good start to believing in a higher power.
Yeah, absolutely.
I prefer higher power, but, you know, and it's to each their own. But that's what's great about recovery is, you know, I was just talking about this yesterday. My higher power is the one thing I'm selfish about. You can't have it. It's mine. You got to go find your own, because I found that having a higher power is very personal. It was the first personal relationship that was successful, and I'm very selfish about it.
Yeah, I think I can relate. Though, with my experience, that was my higher power speaking to me through my sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, yeah. And I used that relationship with my sponsor to build or to example for all of the other relationships in my life.
Yeah.
Whether they were professional, therapeutic, family, you know.
Yeah, because before I would just take and take and take and take. And now my life's on a give and take basis. I will give before I take now, because I feel like I feel like I took a lot already, so I feel like I owe.
Mm.
I feel like I owe my community. I feel like I owe God, and I owe myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So are there any parting words of wisdom that, you know, do you have a few simple things that you do each day to keep your sobriety going?
Routine. I wouldn't say time slots at all.
Okay.
I would like that, but yeah. Prayer, a few times a day. Meditation, a few times a day. Writing, whether it's journaling or step work.
Okay.
And of course, communicating with another peer in recovery.
You know, yeah.
And applying the principles that we read about.
Yeah. So
because it's not just reading them, it's not just writing them, it's applying them that really is key, or the three together.
It really is, and understanding the principles. Let's, before we wrap up, I'd like to give a little plug. to Reach. You want to tell people a little bit about Reach, how to get a hold of you?
I wish we had a chat here. We have a website. Can I actually tell it to you?
I will throw it because nobody can see anything. Okay. So I will put your website so everybody knows. It'll be in the description when I put it out.
All right. Yeah. So Reach Sober Living, we're a transitional sober home for men in recovery. We have an age limit on our information, but that's not in stone.
Okay.
As long as someone can work, it's key to being here. Otherwise, we can help you find a place that would accommodate you better. Aside from that, it's some of the same things I've mentioned. There's structure here.
Yep.
It's not prison at all. We operate from a place of love. Like, we're very compassionate over everything. Yeah. That sadly makes us stand out amongst a lot of the other homes. Yeah. But at the same time, we're setting that example for them as well.
We need it.
We have multiple things going on, and it's client or resident based.
Yeah.
They're based upon their needs. So let's say we have 10 gentlemen that we're dealing with, right? We're not going to deal with them all the same way.
Nope.
Kind of like the court system would do that. That's not.
Yep.
We have to see them and treat them as an individual. They're going to have different needs. But our number one priority here is building relationships with them. That's vital.
Without building a relationship, you can't help.
Right. Yep. Trust.
Jason, something that I love that you guys are doing is you're meeting people where they're at.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's what you're doing, and it's beautiful.
And then beyond here, like I said, it's the next phase. If they so choose, the independent living, like a efficiency apartment of their own without supervision. These phase threes, they are supervised.
Yeah.
Throughout the day. But supervision probably isn't even the best way to put that. We're staffed to support the men.
That's it. You know, for and I wish Colorado had more of this, but as somebody who's been homeless twice, I'm about reintegration. That's what I'm about. Seeing what somebody's needs are and then getting those needs met, whether that's a roof, whether it's food, driver's license, insurance, primary care physician, these things that we need. Can somebody get and stay sober without a roof over their head? Sure, but they have a 40% chance more of making it if they do. When we provide those needs, we can get somebody sober sometimes.
Right, and it's all these little things. You know what I mean? Like, we have a financial coach. It's about to start with the man.
Oh,
the budget, basic life skills. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I change a tire, file taxes.
And it's amazing just to be a part of this.
It is. Isn't it the best part of recovery?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I say it all the time. And the probably the most amazing part is it's not like we do this just for them. It's for us too.
Yeah.
Like, I tell the guys, man, like, I learned just as much from you guys as you do from us.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
You bet. Newcomers have wisdom, nuggets of wisdom. When I go to a meeting, I'm listening to everybody because God talks through his people.
Yes.
And I don't get to choose which ones.
Right.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on, taking your time, man. And it was fun to get to know you a little bit better, too.
Absolutely. We should do this more often.
Yeah, absolutely. As for my listeners, thank you so much for listening in and for all your support and everything that we do. I was able to see a lot of myself in Jason's story as far as having to grow up too early and understanding that anger in my family maybe necessarily wasn't the norm. That wasn't normal, but I thought it was. The other thing that I caught was, and I agreed with this, was I'd be running around doing things, and it was like an out-of-body experience. You know, I'd be telling myself, don't do that, Dion, but I would do it anyway. So, but thank God things have changed, and we're all in recovery now. So, thank you, everybody, for being here. I love you. You know I do. Peace out, and have a day.